Hope is an intrinsic aspect of the Unitarian Universalist faith. It is one of the core underpinnings of our religion because Unitarian Universalism is a liberal theology. Liberal not by its politics necessarily, but its theology. And it is so because we believe the revelation is continually unfolding. It's not sealed from 2,000 years ago, and the gospel comes either from the Dixie Chicks or from the Indigo Girls or from Bach, Brad Paisley, any number of these, Garth Brooks. It's always unfolding. It is our call as liberal religionists to believe in hope, because there is always hope that the divine will speak to you through your experience. As many of our members include some aspect of humanism in their faith, hope abounds. As the president-elect has said, hope is not some blind optimism that things will work out, but a commitment to action to make the changes we need to see in the world. Perfect description of some of our actions and beliefs in humanism. Many humanists would say that this call, this belief is that it's because we are the ones who alter the course of the world, not some divine providence. And we bear the responsibility of that charge. And with it being left up to us humans, perhaps it is a bit audacious to hope. We have been both our own worst enemies as well as our own saviors. We make mistakes that often take generations to fix. And yet, we have been hopeful, both collectively and individually, when we have felt displaced from comfort and from home, and when we have desired to make it back to our rightful place. Thousands of years ago, a great leader learned from God that although he worked for years, fought the Pharaoh, delivered his people from Egypt, and traveled the desert, the privilege of going home would not be his. It's a story that, often with less importance, resonates with our work life. We do the work, and yet someone else gets credit or benefits, right? Moses, though, seems to harbor little regret. He lived a long life and worked hard to please God while doing right by his people. And though he never saw that land of milk and honey, he accomplished his goals and tasks. And Joshua, a young man compared to Moses, he had a different mission, a different battle, something new to fight for. For so many years, the people were hopeful to see their work pay off, and yet Moses knew that it would happen without him. I can't help but be recalled to that April 3rd sermon from Dr. King, in which he said, "I can see the promised land. I might not get there with you, but know that we as a people will get to the promised land." It's easy for us in the pulpit this Sunday to use the story of Moses and Joshua to talk about Martin and Barack. It was the president-elect himself who brought us this imagery and the allusion to the Bible almost 2 years ago. I was sitting in a hospital that day. It was a Sunday. And I was working as a chaplain in Chicago. And in the middle of the afternoon, we usually started filling out our daily report. Little information about who we saw, what room, what floor, if they needed follow-up. You can't do that sort of work without some background noise. And not having the Dixie Chicks, I turned on the television. I flipped through, and on CNN, there was Barack Obama in a church on a Sunday afternoon. I heard him talk in front of the leadership of the civil rights movement from the 50s and 60s. I heard him talk to the leadership of today. I listened as he recalled that we are where we are today only because we stand on the shoulders of giants. I kind of embarrassingly now, I can recall sitting in that room alone, clapping and nodding. I stand on the shoulders of giants. And that's the only reason I am where I am. Many people will wonder and pontificate on whether or not this week and its festivities are what Dr. King had in mind. Assuredly, he would have been amazed and proud. Our nation's first black president. Simultaneously, I can't help but think of Fannie Lou Hamer, who in 1964 tried to integrate the Democratic National Convention. What would she think about the inauguration in 2 days? I don't pretend to know the mind of President-elect Obama or what Fannie Lou Hamer would have thought, but I imagine that each of them are reminded that as great as this moment in history is, there's more to be done. Dr. King said, "It's all right to talk about long white robes over yonder, but ultimately people want some suits and dresses and shoes to wear down here. It's all right to talk about streets flowing with milk and honey, but God has commanded us to be concerned about the slums down here and children who can't eat 3 square meals a day. It's all right to talk about the New Jerusalem, but one day, God's preacher, and I surmise all people, must talk about the new Atlanta, the new Philadelphia, the new Los Angeles, the new Memphis. This is what we have to do." I take this to mean that we should embrace hope and celebration with this new president, to celebrate the hard work of many and democracy at its finest, a peaceful transition of power. But we also have to look at the whole of this nation and continue to work. Things don't end with one victory, such as the Civil Rights Bill of 64, or with the election of a mayor, or governor, or senator, or president. And that's where we come in. You see, luckily for us, President Obama turned the story of Moses and Joshua from a story about himself to a story about all of us. We were really learning about the collective Moses. Fannie Lou, Bayard Rustin, Coretta, James Reeve, Viola Liuzzo, the Freedom Riders, the Little Rock Nine, the Birmingham Four, the nameless children who went to jail, the nameless adults who followed them. The Moses of the 1950s and 60s was not one person, though we are eternally thankful for leadership through those such as Dr. King. And the Joshua of today is not the president-elect, though he can at times call us to our highest ideals. The Joshua of today are all of us, our children, and our grandparents. The generations of leadership will continue to, in the words of Theodore Parker, bend the long arc of the moral universe toward justice. And yet, though we make that progress, we are humans. We fail, we regress. And it's this dialectic, this continual back and forth between good and evil, that incrementally will get us to a place of love and justice for all of the world to see. It is with this that we realize that Dr. King's work and dream are far from over. He called for an end to police brutality, an end to economic disparity, and for the rights of poor whites and blacks to be upheld throughout this country. He called for this nation to love his children and all children for who they are inside and not just their skin color. And yet, in 2009, we still have racism. Even with the election of Barack Obama, there will be children of color who see themselves as not beautiful or not as smart as their white counterparts. Our culture sends out messages that black children and Latino children, Asian children, indigenous children, mixed children especially, need to do something or be something other than what they are to be accepted. And yet there's more. It's not just racism. In 2009, more than 40 years after the work of Dr. King, we are losing far too many children and teenagers and adults to suicide because they're gay or lesbian, bisexual, they're transgendered, and no one is there for them. I know that many people, myself and many of you, work hard and devote their time to helping our children and others. But as a people, as a nation, we are failing the vast majority of children because of their race, their sexuality, their gender, their body, or class. It's not just the privileged of America that's failing. It's all of us. And I say this because as I read over Dr. King's words, I kept coming upon this phrase, either we go up together or we go down together. It is our principle that we are tied in a web of mutuality, just like Dr. King said. I hope that with that and with our new president, children will see themselves as someone and somebody who can grow. We have hope for what they see. As we stand at the door to a new day in America, as we look over the horizon and wonder how to cross that River Jordan, we know there is much to be done. And yet, with one another at our sides, with religious communities holding us up and calling us forth, we search for our promised land. There's much to celebrate, and yet much more to do. Let us remember that the words we tell our kids, that you can grow up to be president if you want, are still only true for a select few. Let us remember that kids with disabilities are hidden from the fact that FDR was in a wheelchair. Let us remember the sexism that pervades our country, and that the young girls that are looking up to our leaders saw them either treated as sexual objects or pushed to be more like men in their quest for the presidency. Like the generations before us, we will fight and we will struggle and we'll fall down occasionally, only to be saved by our hard work. We must do this together. Dr. King, President-elect Obama, Senators McCain and Clinton, all of these, in recent past, you've heard these phrases that we must come together and work for progress as one body, one nation, committed to change. We are entering one of the toughest economic situations in a little while, certainly worse than the recession in 2001, maybe bringing us back to the 80s or even further. Things will get tighter, and in the past we've waited it out with hopes that we can continue our individualistic lives in homes far away from one another so that we don't have to see the pain. And we can hide our own pain. However, I have to wonder if that time is coming to an end. There was a time that we thought nothing would change our driving habits. When gas was 89 cents, as it was when I started driving, you could drive wherever you wanted, make a quick trip to the store and home, and then to the store and home. And yet, things have changed. Even with gas prices going down, people are driving less. There's a book, it's called Habits of the Heart. It studies individualism and commitment in American life. This book was first written in the 80s, during its own recession, and yet the words are hauntingly true. The editors write, now that economic growth is faltering, we are beginning to understand that our common life requires more than an exclusive concern for material accumulation. They go on to write, we will need to remember that we did not create ourselves, that we owe what we are to the communities that formed us, and to what Paul Tillich, the great theologian, called the structure of grace in history. We will need to see the story of our life on this earth not as an unbroken success, but as a history of suffering and joy. This is where the biblical story comes back to provide us some insight. Joshua was with Moses. He followed him and he studied his work. Moses dies and Joshua takes over using new tools, doing things a little differently. Maybe he had I am, Israelite messenger. Maybe he had something like that, but he had new tools and a new vision cast for a new day. And at the end of Joshua's days, he tells the tribes of Israel, those people who have suffered and are tired, worried, and just ready to be home and safe. He tells them that we've gotten this far not by our own work alone, but because we stand on the shoulders of giants, and that we must do what it is God says, or else we risk losing it all. I suspect that in 2 days, we'll hear the president-elect say something similar about our need to come together to make it through this difficult time, this difficult economy, to form a better nation, or else we risk losing it all. And that is where we are today, on the banks of the Jordan. In our own personal lives, we have rivers we need to cross. We've been brought there by mentors, and we know that somehow, be it a job transition, a divorce, sickness, retirement, somehow, we must cross over. Will we fight for that new place, for the happiness that is owed to us? When we get there, will we live a righteous life, do well by those future generations? And in our greater life, in the greater world, how will we accomplish a land for all people? Like Joshua, we are standing on the outside with hope. Hope and commitment. We are awakened to and ready to make our home. We are both Joshua preparing to enter this new land and the Israelites, tired, wanting to be at peace in our lives. We have been led to the river and we can see a green, lush land on the horizon. We see Canaan and we know that after we cross Jordan, we can set up a place for all of the tribes of America. Come and go with me to that land where all of the people of America are at peace, where rights are extended to all of them, gay and straight, black and white, brown, female, male, transgendered, bisexual, rich and poor, immigrant and citizen, able-bodied and not. Imagine our future, the one we'll create together. Come and go with me to that land, the land that was soaked in pain and tears and blood, and now, hopefully, after many years, in joy and hope and reconciliation. Come and go with me to that land, they sang. Because if we work hard enough, there will be freedom in that land. Amen and blessed be.